Well, that's great. We always start off with News from Washington and from HMTRI. Heather, are you there?
Yes, I am. All right, so there's no news from headquarters. They just, we're kind of in that delightful waiting phase of things, so we'll just keep waiting and going from there. From HMTRI side of stuff, we did want to remind you that next Tuesday, this is February 20th, at 2 p.m. Eastern time, we will have a special webinar. ATEC will be joining us for Brownfields Environmental Workforce Instructors and Students. We're going to look at educational resources for that group of people. Melanie Dougherty is an instructional designer at ATEC, and she will discuss Brownfields in a Box, which is a great resource to sort of find ways to integrate science, math, and critical thinking using that Brownfields case studies and examples and things like that. And then Linda Baxley, she is the director at ATEC, and she will explore the Defining Careers website and resources. These are really fantastic snapshots of the environmental, water, and energy job fields, and it looks at what type of jobs are out there, what type of careers might be of interest to some students. And these are careers that focus on minimal educational investment. So you're looking at certification, diploma, two-year degree type of job fields. Also wanted to push you guys, don't forget to send me your registration for the All Grantee meeting in Alexandria, Virginia on August 8th and 9th. You can send that to hkballou@eicc.edu. Mike, I think that's all I had.
I'll put a copy of the application form for the All Grantee meeting. We're starting early this year. If you also have any sessions you'd like to see that we may not have thought about or done in the past, just write a note on that you'd like to see the sessions. As we go through the next couple months, we'll be sending out information on a little survey on what you'd like to see. We'll put on there what we had in the past, try some new things, see what other approaches people would like to use. And we'll be going back and forth. And as we get closer, we'll be working with the regional coordinators. It's shaping up already. People in EPA are all enthused about it this year and excited to see everyone again. The presentation today is going to be Art Shanks, and all of you who have been at any of our grantee meetings or are a grantee or past grantee know all about Art. He's been with the program since the beginning. With the Private Industry Council back in 1998. Arts won all sorts of awards, national awards, the Department of Labor, local awards from the mayor and various organizations in Oakland. And there's a reason for that. He's built an incredible organization working with difficult populations. Oakland, if you look at a map, is the East Bay region. When you look at San Francisco and then go to the Bay on the east side, you cross a bridge and you're into Oakland. And Art works in that area between Oakland going up to Richmond. The last PLC we had Richmond. We talked about the difficulties Richmond has. If you look at it almost like an L shape, you've got Richmond and then you go to Pittsburgh. And you're talking about a very difficult area. There's a lot of port activity. I think the nation's fifth largest port is in Oakland, in that area, actually being the shipping hub for San Francisco. And over the years, there's been lots of transitions, I think encouraging, and Art can tell us about this, but it's encouraging that things have gotten better, or maybe not. It's becoming gentrified, and where, as you go north and east, they have a lot of difficult problems, and I'm sure that Art has a real challenge in his program. The thing about Art's program is when you get into it, you understand why it's so good and why he's been successful. And he'll tell us about that more. But he covers all the bases in terms of working partners, working with his students, all the way through the program. One thing I would ask everyone is please no speakerphones. If you have a speakerphone, please put us on mount. We're getting someone that please put us on speaker, not put us on speakerphone. And if you do, and there's someone else in that room, mute us. Don't put us on hold. just we keep open mic, so that could be a challenge with these speakerphones. They're so sensitive. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Art, and he's going to tell us about his program.
Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. How are you doing? This is Art Shanks with the Cypress Mandela Training Center. So first, let me just say it's a privilege to be able to be on and share with you today, and I hope that all of you will gain some experience or some information from what I have to articulate. So just briefly, a little history on the program. The Cypress Mandela Training Center started because of the collapse of the Loma Prieta earthquake back in 1989. And when the collapse of that double-decker freeway in West Oakland happened, activists got together and decided that if work was going to happen in that area, that it should have people to look like the individuals from that area go to work on those projects. So with that, out of 1989, when that collapse happened, it took basically a few years to put it together. In 1993, we started the program. Program started to help individuals in the community that had significant barriers to employment. And if anybody knows anything about West Oakland had the highest crime rate, the highest unemployment rate, and it had the highest teenager pregnancy rate. So going into the community, starting a program to make a difference in the community was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. And being a nonprofit certainly didn't help, because nonprofits are pretty poor, particularly we were. So getting people from the community to go to work was a challenge. Educating them past the point of not being chemically dependent or loving themselves and wanting to have a better quality life was one of the hardest things I had to do to try to put in place. So we knew that if we were going to help individuals, we needed to do some drug screening. So drug screening was instituted at Cypress earlier in the day. I started drug testing back in 1996 and 97 so that we could find out what was students that were coming into the program were on, so that we could help them. Doing so, we started the program at 9 weeks, and after in the program for 7 months, I changed it. I bumped it up to 12 weeks because I saw 9 weeks wasn't enough, because of the deficiency from coming from the Oakland Public Schools was not allowing them to get into the trades. So in our area, we knew that we were going to have significant base closures in 1997 and 98 because Ron Dellums was a congressperson from our area, and Oakland suffered, along with the Bay Area, I would say, suffered the most base closure than anybody else. So we had the Oakland Army Base, we had Alameda Fleet Hospital that closed, we had the Naval Hospital that closed in Oakland. So we had in Oakland by itself about three different bases that closed at one time, and not to mention Mare Island and all the other ones that closed down at Fort Ord. So Oakland was impacted significantly with those base closures. Alameda was another one that also closed up. So in our era, we knew that we were going to have a large number of bases that closed that had a lot of contaminants, asbestos, and lead on them. So with that being said, we got our first pilot in 1998 to do the training to do cleanup on those bases, and we put a significant amount of individuals to work on those bases to do the cleanup work in their own community. So we were pretty happy at reaching 100% placement, and training went very well. So back then we were training residents that came into the program from basically West Oakland is where we were focused on, and then later we opened up to general Oakland. So in West Oakland, we dried up the population very quickly and moved to East Oakland to gain more access to participants to come into the program. So after the first year, we bumped the program up again. We found out that the 12 weeks wasn't enough, so we bumped it to 14 weeks, and then we incorporated a life skills component. The life skills component is probably the meats and bones of the program, because the program focused on chemical dependency, it focused on toxic relationships, it focused on time management, budgeting, parenting, nutrition. And one of the things that I would say is teaching a person a good work decor, how to walk, how to talk, how to dress. So a lot of our students didn't really have that sensation. So Cypress is continuously evolving, and today we have evolved into a 16-week program, which is a boot camp training, which students come in, they must be haircut, they must have uniforms on, no cell phones, pagers, jewelry. So the program was designed to make sure that our participants went out, had the best employment opportunities. So with the life skills component augmented with the 16-week hands-on component, so students would come into a 16-week pre-apprenticeship program where they would gain some skills in carpentry, electrical, cement masonry, ironwork, taping, and painting. So they would have a clad iron idea of exactly what they would go into or what they wanted to do, so we didn't waste apprenticeship time or the contractor's time. Now, that was one piece of it, but the other piece was the environmental training piece that was an addition to this piece, which was 3 weeks by itself. And that's when students were learning the hazardous waste, lead, asbestos, in a confined space, along with CPR and first aid and AED training. So this was all going on at the same time. So when students left out of the 16 weeks, they had a total of 7 certifications. Those 7 certifications allowed them to go to work on any project and be employed, and their employment opportunities in terms of money started around anywhere from $20 an hour up to $25 an hour, predicated on what trade or what craft they went into. So today, here we are fast-forwarding. We were in West Oakland for 23 years. We now moved into East Oakland. We had 40,000 square feet when we were in West Oakland, and I saw that that wasn't enough to really gain access to impact more of the people from the community that were didn't have an opportunity to have meaningful employment or were kicked to the curb, if you will, if I can use that analogy. So now we're in a facility that has 80,000 square feet, and we have 6 acres up front that we use also for trenching, setting up different scaffolding situations, and also teaching them about heavy equipment operations. So they can see that firsthand up front in the 6 acres that we have, along with our 80,000 square foot facility. So now the program has evolved into a 360 degree world, if I could say, of employment opportunities. So students that come into the program can go into environmental training. They can come out of that and go directly into employment. They can go into PG&E. They can go into our pre-apprenticeship component, or they can go into the renewable energy, green construction and training, and that's the solar industry. So there's no reason why a kid can't come out of the program and go into some type of employment, even if he decides he doesn't want to do any of those facets of training that he has picked up. The trades that he learned or the skills will still carry him over into any type of employment that he does choose to go into. So with this 16-week program, we say it is one of the most intense programs of the nation, where students can come out, they go directly into employment, not waiting on a list and a union, and that's the beauty of the partnership with the building trades. So students that complete their 16-week training go directly to work either a week or a week after they are graduated from the program. So we usually bat about 95 to 98% placement rate, and the retention rate is more what I focus on. It's about 85 to 90%. So maintaining that can be difficult today with the millennials with a different mindset. So we know we have to continuously change the curriculum to adapt so that we're capturing those individuals that might not really understand what the work decor was or the sensation was back from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and, you know, what happened in the 30s and the history of the Guild period. So bringing all that forward, it's very, very difficult to continue to try to bring people in and train them in a way that they would benefit their lives. But it could be done with a lot of work and having a staff that backs you up. So I have a 10-person staff team that works very close with me. The life skills counselors work with these individuals. The job coordinator works with them. And then myself, we make sure that we have staff on board to assist them with any mentorship that happens while they're in the training. So we follow them through all the way through their apprenticeship program. Apprenticeship program can be anywhere from 3 to 5 years. It's predicated on the craft that they go into. So the whole idea is to make sure that we make tax law-abiding citizens that will be productive in society, and they don't have to revert back to those negative things that they used to do, and can become citizens that really care about themselves and care about their communities. So in our area now, you used to could buy a house in West Oakland for like $90,000, anywhere between $50,000 and $90,000. And I call them dog shacks. But today, that same area, if you had to buy a house over there, would cost you $895,000. So all the gentrification that's happened in that area, and now Oakland is on the move for trying to be a mini San Francisco. They're putting in affordable housing basically everywhere. So there's like 8-9 different high-rises. Well, not high-rises, but 6-7-story affordable housing, misused properties going up right now as we speak. And these also have to have people of Oakland residents to work on them with the requirements of our first-hand hiring agreements. So working with the building trades, partner with the justice system, partner with the EPA, and of course AC Transit, BART, and the probation department, sheriff department, all these help to make sure that students receive the kind of services that they deserve, particularly since they've been kicked to the curb, overlooked, or just haven't had an opportunity to get into any meaningful employment. So I think I'll stop talking right there and just ask Nelsie, are you on the line, Nelsie?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll let Eric and Nelsie talk to you a little bit about the other work that we're doing in there. These are the new arts is going to be taking over. So Nelsie and Eric, you want to introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about it?
Sure. I'm Eric Shanks, and no, I'm not Art's son. I'm his brother. we'll just get that out of the way right away. And
I'm Nelsie. I'm program specialist here at Cypress, handling all of the case management, the reporting process, and also just doing all the retention work. And then Eric also helps out with components on.
Yeah, I'm one of the OSHA trainers underneath a partnership with the EPA. So we provide a whole array. We start with infectious disease, and that's an important one dealing with the emerging workforce that you have. We have a public transportation, so the points of contact in which people interact as they go to work, and also with their coworkers. So we felt that that was an important module to kind of add to that. We do also Zika is another big one. Then we move to CPR first aid and AED training and blood pathogens. So blood pathogens is another important one to add, again, for the health and safety component when they go to work. We find that it's a big one even with our employers because we wanted to make sure, as already mentioned before, the most capability, and we found that the employers, it saves them money by having these certifications, so that's a real, where the minute that they hit the ground, they can go to work and use this. A lot of our students also become safety supervisors, serving that capacity for, certainly for the smaller companies who don't have resources, or the kind of trainings that we provide, and thanks to the EPA, it's really become a wonderful kind of partnership around that part, because they don't otherwise have that capability. So it becomes really, really important around that and adding to the bottom line. And it helps them also avoid the OSHA fines as well. So that's another big savings for companies. If you have somebody to set up the policies and knows what the standards are under 1910 and 1926, general industry or construction. And so the OSHA 10 is the backbone, as I mentioned before. We go a little beyond the 10-hour training. We provide 14 and a half hours of OSHA training, focusing on the Focus 4. And that's really like a really binding part as well for a lot of our students that we train here. Also, I'd like to mention at this point that last year was the first time that we were able to train over 100 high school students. We certified 50 of those students last year, so that was a very big to-do, given empowering our high school students as well. They're also become part of that workforce as they emerge in the future. So, and when they go back to school, they have their OSHA 10 cards, and so it's just like it's really a great thing to see when you empower young people and to give them the leg up as they enter the workforce. So the other part is the 40-hour HAZWOP is another part. We do heat illness. We do mold remediation. That's an awareness. We also focus on what we call reclaimed water for dealing with our East Bay Mud is our utility company for our water system here, so water treatment and sewage and management of that. That's another component. We also do confined space. That's another important one as well. A lot of our workers will be placed in confined space opportunities, so we want to make sure we give them the most. And these are very hazardous kind of things, so really to point that out from an industry perspective, it's very important. We use a lot of fatal facts when we're doing this in real-life kind of scenarios, so nothing is sugar-coated when we get into a situation with our students. And the 40-hour is a week-long training, and the direct out. We also do LOH, Safe and Healthy Patient Safety, is one of what UC Berkeley, our other partners as well. We do green awareness, and a lot of folks really didn't understand what that was about. But when solar, for example, first came onto the market, there was no safety training available. So UC Berkeley developed a safety program around using part of our folks as a background. Roofers are one of the few trades that deal with high level, but nobody was tying off. So that became a very big, as they saw an increase in injuries as a result. So those are just the main caveats in what we're saying, our main boiler points and part of these certifications. And on top of that, they do ladder safety expos as well, like Hilti. We get some outside certifications, the harness, lanyards. We make sure that we cover a wide spectrum and working in high level. So we have multiple ladders that we use as well. Some students that come into our trainers have never had any construction relations or contact at all other than maybe seeing somebody. So when you have somebody who's never been on a 20-foot ladder to climb up and to go to the top of that ladder and then stretch out your arms, it is something quite to see. And it takes time. It takes practice to kind of develop, to get over your fears. We do advanced training as well. So at the advanced training, there's even more safety. And at the advanced training, somebody may be put into a situation being a bucket lift that goes up 50 feet. And so often get your nerves up. We have students that have to climb poles or towers, 100 foot, and then they have 500 foot towers as well. So if you've never done that before, then it's quite nerve-wracking. And I'll pause there too for any questions or allow Nelson.
Yeah, I also just wanted to also highlight some things that Art was also talking about, too. Along with our partnerships, the partnerships are really important in making the program also very successful in terms of partnering with the building construction trades, partnering with social services. And it's important because it provides a full whole systems kind of approach where when it comes to case management, it definitely makes it a lot easier in providing full services for each individual whose needs are very, very different, right? And so Art does a very, very good job at the life skills, as I believe mentioned before in another conference call too. His life skills is very, very good. And then mixed with the partnerships, it's very inspiring for the students when applying for jobs. And then also, as Eric was saying, the whole training, right? The training is very, very intense. And I believe from the history that I've heard about the program before I started, Cyprus, the EWDJT program, the Cyprus program itself, the Cyprus program was shorter weeks when they first started, and then they eventually learned that as the needs, right, when they were assessing the needs of the students, the program then grew. right, to add on more weeks of training and got it up to now the 16-week training to make sure that the students get a full roundabout systems approach. And also another component that we have been working on is the training and the certification has made it possible for the students to go on to work on crisis prevention as well in the community whenever there is a relief effort. We had, I believe, a total of either 12 to 15 students or graduates working on the restoration, the cleanup after the California wildfires in Northern California. So that was really, I mean, just totally mind-blowing and inspirational to see, you know, how dedicated the students were. And then also we had them participating in doing food drives for families that were displaced, as well as helping out on the Puerto Rican hurricane relief efforts as well. And that involved them putting their ideas together after joining unions, such as the Electrical Workers Union. That was one of the first unions deployed to Puerto Rico to help on the transmitter system. And IBEW. Yep, and I think we'll leave the rest of the time for questions. That way anyone can, you know, definitely ask a lot of questions if they have any.
You know, in reviewing, getting ready for this call, I was looking at, and I'm going to put these in the post-session notes, what impresses me about your program and your model is you had an established construction program, and because of EPA, you were able to add this environmental component. So you had the synergies of these different programs, and it flows through in everything you do. You have these very strong partners. You're well-known in the neighborhood. But your videos, you're going to have a recruitment session, an orientation next week, I believe, or at the beginning of March, I believe. And you're going to have to hold it in an auditorium, it sounds like. And then it indicated on your website that the next day you're going to go into your testing and evaluation. And you've got some recruitment videos that I'm going to put a reference to that are awesome. These are people who joined the program and in their own words, talked about what this program meant to them, and it's you do such a good job in recruitment. Could you tell us a little bit about that process of how you get from what may be 100, maybe more, down to 20 or 30?
Sure. So, you're allowed to. Anybody's allowed to apply to our program. And the first step is that you have to attend the orientation, and then we hand out our applications there. We have our partners here to kind of explain what the partnerships are about and what the expectations are. We have our program assistant and administrator to go over what the we'll call the quals. And so you have to have either be registered in a GED program or high school diploma. You have to have your I-9s, your right to work documents. We know how stressful that is now. And that follows down to that, and also a driver's license. And so these are like a social security. You can have a passport. So, again, anything to identify you as your right to work document. So those are what we call our quals. And a lot of folks, if they don't have these items, then they self-eliminate. And you have a limited amount of time because of the process to kind of get through. So you have the orientation. You have to drop off your documentation. You do what we call a test assessment. We use a TABE test. We do both a pre and a post for that as well. And then they have to have a personal interview around that. And so on that TABE test, we're just looking at where they are, and so we know if somebody that has a math, there's two math sections on that, and then there's a reading comprehension part. If somebody is having a reading comprehension part, then we kind of know how to address that up front. if it's going in the 20s or something like that, kind of look at those things. Also, they have a personal interview. They can come into the program and you know, chemically dependent, but they can't leave that way. So doing the personal interview, a lot of stuff comes out. And if a person definitely has...
For more information about New York City government services, dial 311.
Then that's another thing to look at as well. Nelsie wants to add something.
Yeah, and I also wanted to highlight, too, it goes back to... two more components too, right? So one, again, partnerships. The partnerships with the Unified School District and their career fairs, high schools, the community colleges we're also partnered with. We let them know that they receive a certain amount of credits for actually being a part of the Cypress Mandela Training Center so that they have an opportunity to, you know, go on to community college if they chose to do so after the program. And we also do a lot of social media recruitment. We post up in social services, the one-stop career centers. And I think one of the most best ways that we recruit also is just via word of mouth. We found that, you know, by taking in 75 to 100 students or more, right, per cohort 3 times a year, there's a lot of students that go home and they tell their siblings, their cousins, they tell community members. I mean, we have people from restaurants calling us and being like, hey, you know, I'm this person from, you know, JJ Fish. My cousin just did the program, you know, and we really want to sign up. When's your next orientation? So I would say a lot of it is word of mouth, and again, our partnership.
But what are your
size of your cohorts versus your when you go for consideration of those applicants, and then your class size?
Well, there's a 300 person coming into an orientation, and that's whittled down to about 60, 65 students per cohort. So it's a waiting list of about 300 people each class.
Wow. That's huge.
Yeah, that's correct.
Now, when you're going into your 16-week program and you're giving them all these interesting things in terms of construction, which they could go out and get a job, and it also prepares them for the environmental, do you then ask who wants to go into the environmental, or do you integrate it all into one program? Is that 16-week include the environmental?
So in the 16-week, you have a 8-week environmental only. So those students also receive the other part of the 16-week training. So it become very diversified. And so a lot of those workers, they go right into either working for Dow Chemical, PG&E. A lot of companies prefer that because they don't have to. They have a environmental, they already have a person with a 40-hour HAZWOPR that could help remediate some things immediately. And that's a plus savings for a company, if you think about it, where I don't have to send them out for training. They already have the training that I need. And so students will also identify the areas that they want to go into and the companies. You know, so we're talking about major Fortune 500 companies that are picking up and asking for our grads. Also, the other partnerships that have come online that deal with the environmental that we know for a fact, IQ Personnel is another one, for example. Aerotech is another one that uses a lot of those. We have clients that kind of roam into that. And then we have our what we call our main staple contractors locally here. Also, part of the groups that our EQM management is another one that hires a lot of our students as well. So wherever there is that opportunity and linkage, that's kind of like how it happens. Almost every trade deals with that. Students also worked on a Calaveras Dam, part of the PUC project. So it was actually a wonderful opportunity that students had who may have gone in as general classification and trade as labor, also had these other items for being working to remediate some of those hazards with their company. So, yeah.
Oh, that's in Castro Valley.
If you were a new grantee, or you say you were going to submit a new grantee application next November, and you were standing here as we speak today, what would you say potential program managers should be doing right now in terms of who should they be lining up or courting, or what advice would you give to someone that's just coming into this program?
Well, I think it's important to get the linkages up front and identify that.
For more information about New York City government services,
and that is from beginning to end, those students graduate or complete the program in training that they have the opportunity. And I think that's what actually fits the program. And having said that, is that the training has to match the intended application for the end user. So we train for the actual contract. You know, how do we save them money? Because the more money that they save, they're able to retain their workforce and get more work. And so they have to have competencies around that part. So putting, you know, your best go out there and know that people need a lot of help. So it doesn't mean that you throw them away. You simply have to give them more training. So those alignments are important. Also considering the other part of that, that is life skill component or retention. If students are not working out on a project, you have to have a mechanism to go back and see the relationship. That's important as well. So you have to consider all of it.
Anyone else have some questions about this program? It's an exciting program. And they've really been able to leverage from a construction program into the environmental program and now do both. And their life skills are incredible. The amount of time you spend with your life skills seems to be really paying off in terms of being able to place your students. And you don't have an easy population to work with. You've got a lot of you've got a highly diverse population, don't you, and a high gang population that you've worked with.
Yeah, you know, it is a diverse population. Like, we have high school with their D, and may not have it, and then we have those with 2 and 3 degrees.
I think
so I think the mixture is so you don't have one or the other. And for the gang profile, we don't really print out a lot of our information on those folks in the gang because it may still create a very dangerous situation, so we don't highlight them.
Remember, for more information about New York City government services,
because of retaliation.
But
I can tell you that if you give somebody an opportunity to go out and make money, legal, and if you give them skills and something that they can be proud on, and there's a natural linkages between the environment and construction. And it's funny that you say that because I'm thinking about the environmental issue in St. Louis behind the construction of uranium and other hazardous waste. So, and workers not really realizing what it is, and they were talking about, you know, they were dumping it. They dump it at night so they can see the fouling fly up, you know, these radiation, and then they build communities right around that. So there's always this natural link between environment and construction. You know, it's a health and wellness and safety issue.
That's right. So our new potential grantees, people developing programs, and maybe those who have established programs, when they look forward to this next re-up or competing, they might want to see how the linkages between construction and environmental. And, of course, in your case, you've got all kinds of partners contributing to the pot. So you're not totally dependent on a $200,000 grant. You've got things coming in from all directions that are all contributing to this incredible program.
That's correct.
Anything anyone would like to add while we have them on the phone? I want to thank you guys. Have to say. Yes, go ahead.
I may have missed this earlier, but how many cohorts do you have?
3 a year.
Okay, thank you.
And how many per cohort? Did you say about?
65.
Wow. 5 per cohort. many of our programs usually run about 20, 25, and they'll have some extras for dropouts. And that's pretty impressive.
Yes.
And a lot of that has to do with your facility, doesn't it? You have plenty of room.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thank you for sharing about the high school students. That is a good idea. This is Ms. LeBoy from ECA, and I like the high school students being involved in the program as well.
Yeah, that's really an important part. Out here, we used to have what's called 4 and 4, 4 hour of applied and 4 hour of lecture. And so when they removed the wood, the metal, and the automotive component out of the high school, we lost that. And
mm-hmm.
so they're trying to get back to that because that was the foundation of our, really our industrial part. And they were shifting to what you consider collegiate, you know, white-collar kind of opportunities. And so now they see the ways that approach did not work very well.
Well, are there any different requirements or screening techniques for the high school students versus the others?
Well, the high school students were brought in on a special program through the PG&E, and they have a grant that they are working with the Oakland Unified School District and some of the other surrounding school districts to it's one of their STEM projects. And so this is a way to kind of boost that up. So we had these students for 4 to 5 weeks, and so it was a wonderful opportunity. Also, the Unified School District, so it's a partnership again to kind of give these folks for the summer. And it was a paid internship for many of them. So they earned, the Oakland Unified School interns, they earned $800. And then the PG&E interns earn $1,000. So it's a different way of really rethinking and working your high school students into the mainstream companies. And I think that's a very valuable thing to use, you know, because in the summertime is when they get in the most trouble. And so if you give them something really to that's really applicable, you know, applied, then if you take away all the fluff, there's no theory in between that. And so that's why the OSHA 10 was so important, because
yes.
you can't get onto a PG&E or industry, a power generator without some of these main staples.
Okay, so is that stipend directly from you with the grant, or is that from another outside entity?
No. That's going to be from the PG&E. There will be the intern.
That's you.
PG&E interns, and just like they would be also the Oakland Unified School District interns. And so then on the Oakland Unified School District internship, they would be move around from the building trades. They would spend time here at Cypress, and we'll certify them here. They'll have an opportunity to touch almost every segment. They may spend time even like at restaurants or chefs. Different industries that they'll be exploring, and that's almost like a year-long kind of program. And so then what they do, they funnel them down to what you consider a construction industry focus. And so we become the construction industry focus around
mm-hmm.
that. So a lot of our students that participated in the high school last year were 10th graders and 11th graders, and we also had seniors. Those seniors that we certified went out to work, and I think Art had a hand in some of those getting their jobs, their first jobs in the construction industry with their OSHA 10 certification right out the gate. So that was pretty exciting for us as well. And Art could probably talk about this because we did run a high school program previously with the Oakland Unified School District. Art, did you want to talk about that?
Well, just I think that integrating young people early into the process, since they're not getting it in high schools, is important. So what we did is partner with the Oakland Unified School District to make sure that we brought high school kids into the process. And I think that was very instrumental. That's where I learned about chemical dependency at a young age with the high school kids. I thought they were getting involved in drugs at 14, 15, but I was wrong. They were getting involved with drugs at the age of 8, 9 years old and was already chemically dependent on THC. So learning that and moving forward from that, we just continue to build that relationship with the Oakland high schools and get those kids in directly at 18 years old, which gives them a leg up in getting into the other trades or to environmental work. So we get them off the streets, make them tax law-abiding citizens, and now the crime rate goes down. And that's the whole idea, was fighting crime and poverty simultaneously.
Oh, that's great. It would be nice to know which one of those students will become the next Art Shanks.
Or she.
Or she, yeah.
I said student.
Anybody else? Nelsie, Eric, Art, been a pleasure. We always enjoy hearing from you, and it's been a little while since the group got to talk to you. Is it okay if anyone could email you or call you, and we'll put your addresses in the post-session notes, if that's okay with you?
Oh, absolutely. We always welcome pilots or grantees to call us and get information. If it's anything we can help across the country, we're more than willing to.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We ran a little over, but it was a great session, and I appreciate you spending your Wednesday afternoon with us.
So it's a pleasure. Mike, it's been a pleasure working with you and the group for many years. I have to say it has been an honor and truly a privilege to be able to sit down and talk with you today after many years of working with you as a professional. You guys are truly professionals. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You'll be missed, Art, greatly.
He's not gone yet.
Happy hump day. Happy hump day.
Well, happy Valentine's Day, everyone. Yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Thank you.
See you in 2 weeks, in 29th or 28th of February. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.